The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Mr. Obika, former senator, he has his BS in economics and finance. Good morning to you, sir. Good morning and welcome back to Freedom.
Good morning, my brother. How's everything? And to your listeners and viewers, I guess, because you're also streaming online.
We're also streaming online. Good morning. How are you?
Well, I can't complain. If I complain, nobody will listen.
No, you go,
I'm doing well.
You're doing well. All right. You could complain all you want on Freedom, but we go listen. I go listen to you. Much to talk about on the economy this morning. We woke up to some great news this morning after high-level talks. According to our story here, written by our senior reporter, Geisha Kaulesa, she is saying this morning that her headlines read, Trump lifts tariffs on TNT fertilizers after high-level talks. What does that mean for us?
Well, I think we should take that story with a pinch of salt, but because it's not Trinidad and Tobago, it's with the world, of which Trinidad and Tobago is a part of, you know? So in this case, it's like if we're saying the price of oil has risen because of our negotiations with OPEC. No, we are price takers in that regard. So in a similar vein, we are basically passive beneficiaries of the U.S. measure. What has happened in the United States, there's been a clamor against the current administration's tariff policies with respect to the cost of living concerns in terms of agricultural produce. So the government rolled back across the board a sweeping number of basically consumer-based agricultural products, things that you get at the neighborhood market, supermarket, tropical items that aren't grown in the U.S., insufficient quantities, as well as in terms of petrochemicals and so on. Mm-hmm. So it really speaks to internal domestic policy regarding the tariff. Because the tariffs were recently added by the current administration, and as part of their global geopolitics and trade, their trade negotiations with countries of the world, and they have decided to roll it back based on internal pressures in their economy. So it has nothing to do with Port of Spain. Persons may like to tell themselves that, but we shouldn't entertain that fallacy.
Well,
but answer your question, Trinidad and Tobago, we benefit from it, as would Guyana, as would Suriname.
Okay, because, I mean, our article is staying here very clearly in September of 2025. Prime Minister Kamala Prasad Bisesa was invited by the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio to high-level discussions in Washington, D.C. And remember, she left New York and she flew to Washington. Was it? No, I think she took a train, if memory serves me correct, and met with Secretary of State. So, I mean, I'm happy that you were able to clear up that these discussions didn't just happen with the Prime Minister of this country, but it was something that was taking place geopolitically with internally and in the U.S. side of things. Now, these tariffs that was placed by the same president and had to come and reverse, as it relates to our locals in Trinidad and Tobago, I mean, it has been stated back in 2024, we exported around $3 billion TT dollars worth of stuff to their country. What those tariffs would have done, they're saying that it took us off the competitive market with the tariffs. Can you explain along the lines with tariffs and with the removal, what that really meant?
Well, only in a case where you're competing with American producers, but I don't think that would have been the issue with our exports to the U.S. America, the United States of America, is our largest trading partner on the planet. All right, so after them, you get depending on whether it's imports or exports, you get China, you get Guyana. All right, so those are the three most important nations to Trinidad and Tobago where trade is concerned. When they increase the tariffs, because they increase it across the board, and many of the tariffs that we faced, we were in some of the countries that didn't get the harshest tariffs. Remember, there were countries getting 100% and 200%, but we were getting similar tariffs to what maybe Singapore was getting and so on, and other countries in the Caribbean. So the net effect may not have been significant. However, tariffs raise the price of goods to consumers in the market, in America that is, and therefore it will reduce their ability to purchase because their funds will be limited. They're increasing salaries of the consumers at the same time as they raise their tariffs in America. So it would have made our products find it a little difficult to get traction. Also, a lot of our companies would have used America as a transshipment into manufacturing and so on. It would have made it more costly as well. So companies would have started to divert their trade outside of the U.S. So it may have worked in terms of a geopolitical thing to get countries to the negotiating table because the current administration in the U.S. wanted to reset some of their trade negotiations, but it was never ideally going to be a long-term measure, and we've seen the rollback of it because they've already reset their trade positions with many countries across the world. I think we're returning back to what we expect. We cannot afford not to do business with the United States of America. That's to put it simply. They are our most important trading partner on the planet.
All right. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Davey, and a pleasant good morning to my beloved friend and well, of course, former Senator Obika Tahaka. Or is it the other
way? Good morning.
That's okay, Tahaka Obika, but it's okay. If we were in a French country, we'd say the last name first.
I will still call you, Senator. One recalls that you were once a member of the UNC and you spoke with regard to finances then. Then you change political affiliations. Is it that the figures and the contributions you were making in the Senate then, to later on when you change your political affiliation, how genuine or was your statements only political? I hope I don't put you in a spot there, but the fact that I trust your financial expertise, how do you view what you were criticizing then when you were opposition to the PNM, and that today you are no longer a part of that political party, you are now. So what we are seeing with regard to economics today as opposed to then, how do you tie that in? Thank you, enjoy.
Well, my criticism, to answer your call, my criticism I always upheld was evidence-based criticism. Of course, in politics, there are times when they descend into the Gael, but the majority, apart from the political commentary, all right, the economic commentary would be evidence-based. So if I would have stated in the past, when I wore a different color, that there's need to increase trade with other countries of the world, Africa, for example, there's need to do business on a different level in terms of improving the ease of doing business. Those criticisms, and the joke is when I changed flags, for example, and I was doing work at the Ministry of Trade, person said, well, okay, you was talking all that talk before, now let me hear what you have. Give us your suggestions. So because my criticism as an economist, I always ensure it's evidence-based. That's why when I'm invited to speak on matters outside of economics, I typically decline because I wouldn't have a basis to make a critical assessment of it. I don't change my position. My position remains the same, regardless.
All right. Let's dive a little deeper into what exactly is the products that we export. There are persons messaging me, they don't understand what exactly are these agricultural products. Can you speak to that, please?
So, well, if you take a drive down to a place called Tableland, you'll see pineapples in abundance, and we export some of that. Then you go next to there, you go to Moruga, you'll see peppers, we export as well. Then you also have persons who are into things like fresh fruit and so on, but these are air freighted items, and the best person to speak to the nuanced aspect in terms of specifics would be maybe the Agricultural Society, their membership, because they are the ones who do that. But we also export cocoa in processed form, processed different varieties, so whether it's the process to the point of the where you get the cocoa pods, or they go even further, where they do some intermediary processing. So it may not be final chocolate, but it may be some intermediary processing of cocoa as well. There would be other products that, but I may not have that much familiarity with. So I can only speak to the ones that I'm intimately aware of. Because as you know, there are several products that we aren't that proficient in export, in producing, and we import a lot. But because the quality of our product is unique, we will still export some of it. An example would be chocolate and cocoa. We do import. But that is because the quality, we don't produce as much that we may need. And then the quality of our cocoa is in such high demand that we would always find ourselves exporting some of it. So there are products that you may, like pineapples, you might find, maybe we import some processed. But you may ask yourself, well, why are we importing, you know, when we're producing here? It's because what we produce here, there's also demand for it externally.
The opposition MP Stuart Young is lending credibility to what you have stated a few moments ago. What he said is government's victory lap was nothing but an attempt to divert attention from what's happening within the sector, as they had nothing to do with these negotiations. Now, do you believe or do you think that even under the current administration, when they paid a visit to Washington, that there were any talks at all in engaging in these tariffs as it relates to how it would affect our non-energy sector in Trinidad and Tobago?
Well, one would expect that they would have had those talks, but we weren't the only ones. Remember, you had all the African countries, you had the ASEAN nations, you had the European countries. So it wasn't just us, South America, Central America. So it wasn't just trying to be. If you draw your mind back, there was a lot of talk, and then you remember you had President Trump making the statement that countries will be begging him to work with them and so on. So it's not just Trinidad and Tobago. There are 200 odd nations on the planet, and for the vast majority of them, the United States will be their first, second, or third most significant trading partner. But if we were to talk about the other things, because Trinidad and Tobago, we tend to forget. Just last month, we had a budget, right? And we had an interesting thing happening where we had a budget where there was no chart for the economy. Maybe that's because the debate shut down, right? It was shut down. So you didn't get other ministers presenting. So then you saw where Minister John would have gotten a chance to present at the end of the budget debate the development agenda under her ministry in Works, Ministry of Works. Now, but the challenge is, where is the financing going to come from? Because you already have a scenario. The economic fundamentals have not changed. You still have rising government deficits and public debt. There's still the economic growth levels are in sync. Well, 1% and 2%. 2% at best. If we get 2%, we celebrate. And we are now recovering. We are still on the recovery part in terms of from the effect of the pandemic in certain respects. And then, of course, the issue with respect to diversification was not necessarily addressed in the budget. So therefore, you saw Minister John seeking to point to what the government's agenda may be in that regard. And so what you see, if you are, because one of the biggest criticisms, and remember I say evidence-based, one of the biggest criticisms of the budget from my point is when I would have spoken to persons was it didn't give you signals. So if, let's say, forget Trinidad and Tobago, let's say you're listening to a budget of a country, let's say somewhere in Africa or somewhere in Asia or in Latin America, and you heard a budget and all you hear is taxes being introduced and complaining about inability to spend, complaining about trying to find money to pay public servants and those increases in salaries and so on. It wouldn't signal to you, okay, there's a place to put my money, and increase tariffs on even taxes on banks and insurance companies and so on. All you're hearing is increased charges, increased cost of electricity, difficulty to do business. You know, you're not hearing, okay, this is the, notwithstanding that, this is the particular sector that we're going to open up. And notwithstanding the higher charges in these areas of the economy, in this sector, we are going to give you some space. So maybe that's why, at the end of that process, Minister John would have tried to present a different perspective. So there was a second budget basically presented. The problem with the second budget presented in terms of the development projects was where the funding is going to come from. And when you heard, when that question was put to the head of cabinet, the prime minister, the response was that the money will be found. Now, whilst that may be acceptable maybe for new cycles locally, it may not necessarily work in the boardroom of foreign direct investors, you know? And therefore, what they would want to see is, okay, what exactly, which parts of this pie can I invest in without being affected by the slew of the laundry list of taxes and charges that have been placed on the economy? And the if I were to be a foreign investor and I'm looking at Randibigo, the opportunity may come by looking at the free trade zones, the special economic zones. We're changing term to the special economic zones. All right. So because if you're in a special economic zone, and that was maintained in the budget, so this is one policy that has survived the past administration. If you're in a special economic zone, you will not have the issue of paying certain taxes, and you'll get certain tax breaks and that kind of thing. So if I'm a foreign investor looking to Trinidad and Tobago, that may be the way to look at it. But then the second thing is where these zones are going to be located, mm-hmm. if it's easy to get a facility to establish and that kind of thing. The other thing is we were quoting the Chinese in terms of onshoring, nearshoring with the U.S. So you had a Chinese company or two setting up in Point Lisas mm-hmm. In the tech park there.
All right,
so what
we have our quote.
Let's go close to one point.
Okay.
What we need to be focusing on as a nation is, okay, we heard all the taxes and we heard all the challenges. What exactly, whether in government or in opposition, what exactly is the opportunity for investment so that even citizens locally can channel their savings there and foreign investors can channel their savings there, and then we can focus on that to build the economy going forward?
Interesting. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Maury. Good morning to Mr. Obika. First of all, I want to agree with Mr. Obika, and I want to agree with other politicians who are totally disagreeing with the government's position that this tariff revocation, the revocation of this tariff is done because of the government lobbying firstly. I totally disagree with that. The person who is totally responsible for this, he could put this as a GOP representative, would be Marjorie Taylor Greene. And second to that would be the Dems with the word. There's a special word, Dave, we call affordability, that has swept across the U.S. for the last election we would have saw recently. So there's no way, per se, in terms of saying that the government can take credit for something that they don't have responsibility for, because we have clearly seen that Trump isn't listening to specific countries where this is concerned. Second to that, before I go, Dave, the Supreme Court will give a ruling on this in the not-too-distant future. All of that must be taken into consideration with regard to this. And yes, while we should be happy, and of course I'm happy, there are a number of agricultural products that go to the U.S., especially if you're a farmer, you would know that pimento, a pumpkin, bhaji, and a host of other stuff is shipped to the U.S. Annually, and that has started somewhat in the last month, October. And it will go all the way, from my knowledge, it will go all the way till April, May. So in terms of the agricultural side of it. So I just thought I would share that in understanding as to what my perspective and in terms of how I see things with regards to this. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, David.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's your point. I want to add one thing as well. In light of the current... But this is a public interest matter. In light of the current classification, the determination that once noise pollution is deemed to be too much, certain cultural spaces are going to be shut out. So, for example, the Brian Lara Cricket Academy. That raises the opportunity now for investment in the orange economy. All right? Whilst I would have an issue, and I would want to agree with the Promoters Association that the timing of the decision was poor. If indeed you wanted to stop that, the business cycle should have started from the moment you took office. That here's what, going forward, for as you plan your carnival events, these venues will be off limits. because they're going to cost, you have visitors planning their trips to come down and all those things. But besides that, it raises an opportunity. Maybe they can look at the development plan, that physical spatial development plan for Trinidad Tobago that Minister John would have outdoored, to identify a space for the orange economy. And if you're asking, where are we going to find the money? Because this is bigger than politics. This is Trinidad Tobago economy we're talking about here, which is where I live, my children live, and so on, right? We want to find the money. The Afro-Exim Bank, the new head of the bank, which is a global bank headquartered in Egypt, they have $3 billion U.S. for the Caribbean, $1.5 billion U.S. reserved because Trinidad Tobago and Jamaica signed on, supposed to have signed on this year, all right? The Afro-Exim Bank could be a place to look for to identify up investors because the government may not be able to take more loans on its balance sheet because then, of course, they may have difficulty in servicing those loans. So we attract foreign investors as well as locals and say, okay, this space, just as we identify E-Tech Park, this space is going to be categorized as a cultural city. And Afro-Exim Bank is bringing the funds. You can speak to the bank and let's identify how you can invest in these spaces. So then we can build up a cultural city and we won't have this issue of ad hoc bans for certain locations because it makes it difficult for persons to invest in the sector.
All right.
So that is an opportunity for us in terms of, because the question we always ask is, where is the money going to come from? There's a bank headquartered, the Caribbean operations in Barbados, sitting down and nobody's borrowing because the largest economy in the CARICOM, Trinidad and Tobago, has not yet accessed it. So there's an opportunity for us to go forward. And they did come and they were invited by the government in August. So we can look at them as an opportunity to take advantage of.
All right. Hello, good morning.
Baby.
Tell me.
Why look at Trump? He removed the tariffs. When did he do it? He did it recently. So we are going to benefit from that. But Mr. Obika, your party for the last 10 years, in my view, has done nothing. Or what you say, they have done nothing. As a matter of our economy, not only stagnated, it regressed. When Kamala left, our GDP was 7.5 billion TT. In 2024, estimated around 54 billion. When Kamala was there, the working force participation rate was just around 45,000. It is now about 580,000. So look this government has inherited a crushed economy. Well, they have to fix it, but what they have done is inherited a crushed economy. But the point, they have to fix it, right? So Mr. Trump has done that, and I'm sure our government has forced him, I use the word force, to remove the tariffs. It is beneficial to all of us. Whether right. Now or never. Thank
all right.
You.
Thank you very much. Hello, good morning.
Well, just to quickly respond, what Donald Trump has done is just reverted to what the position was a few months ago, right? Before he raised the tariff. So there's no change there. In terms of the economy itself, the part of the economy that is struggling is the hydrocarbon sector. The non-energy sector has been growing by leaps and bounds. So it is not true to say that the economy is crashed. Even before the election, the opposition, the now government, admitted openly that yes, the non-energy sector was improving.
All right,
because that is unquestionable. So we need to be evidence-based in our criticism and our analysis of the economy.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Obika or Senator. A man asked a question why you changed position. So I go ask him. When it comes to talking the truth, that's why you changed position. But then, I have one question. I have a statement made by the former Prime Minister that we took $1 billion from probably the central bank, and I can't remember where you take 600 from one place, 400 from one place. Is that? I asked the Minister of Finance sometime about something in a gas station, and he telling me it's not true. Is that true that our importation rate, I think, for 4 months or 6 months we're supposed to have, and they brought it down to somewhere 5 months or 4 months? Is that true, sir?
Okay.
The foreign reserves situation in the economy is heading in a negative direction. It is something that is of concern, and the only way to arrest that is by just the conversation we've been having this morning. Okay, what exactly are the areas for growth in the economy? Where exactly would a foreign investor decide, okay, I'm going to take $1 billion and I'm going to put it at Trinidad instead of in Mauritius, instead of in Sri Lanka? You know, so the conversation after the budget has been focused on all the taxes and so on, and PSA, whether they get any 10% or not and so on, but that is not going to carry the economy forward. What is going to carry the economy forward is by us identifying areas in which the economy can grow, which the government is failing to do because they are being distracted. They are being distracted by things that are not relevant. And what I'm saying is, what is relevant to national conversation may not be relevant to an investor. And we need to focus our mind on that. Maybe they be in your program, because I listen all the time. I didn't bring any panel this morning. Okay, let's say you might need a panel after somebody conversation there. Yeah, right? So, but maybe you should have once a week, I invite even foreign economists to explain what they think, or even maybe like American Chamber of Commerce and foreign business chambers. We'll be doing, I just saw the University of West Indies in Jamaica, in Mona campus. They've signed an agreement, mutual agreement with Ghana, so that if you study medicine in Jamaica, you could practice there. There's opportunity for telemedicine. There's a lot of opportunities. The Ghanaian economy is growing by leaps and bounds. You heard the Minister of Trade, Kamal Maraj, because his brand has been in the African market for a couple decades. It's looking at opportunities. There are opportunities, all right? And it only helps our economy if we pick what worked from the past. In the past administration, the government courted successfully Ghanaian business and society. So therefore, the government has an easy hand with Ghana as a strategic partner for Trinidad and Tobago. There are certain things that we see as necessary for continuance, regardless of which government is in power. When the government changes, nobody stops secondary school education, university education. So the government has changed. We should continue the relationship that we've had with Ghana. And to close on the opening point, the reversal of the tariffs had nothing to do with negotiations from a Trinidad country perspective per se. There are 200-odd countries around the world and territories that have been lobbying with the U.S. administration. And what Donald Trump has done is not improved our status. He has just returned it to what it was before he raised the tariffs a few months ago. So, but that still doesn't change where we were a few months ago. What is more important now is us identifying which part of the economy should go. And sometimes, if the government is not, because the budget didn't provide that leadership, that's why they brought the second budget. I like to call it the second budget with Minister Geraldine John. But within that, the question was asked, where are we going to find the money? And the last point I will say, the creative sector, after the mischaracterization of it as noise pollution, okay, we can find a space, an economic space, create a cultural city, and let's get Afrexim Bank. They're here in the Caribbean, in CARICOM. They can't lend money to Latin America. They could only lend to CARICOM. That's their mandate, Africa and CARICOM. And they have $3 billion for the Caribbean. For CARICOM, the largest economy is Trinidad and Tobago. We're not borrowing. So maybe we can approach them and say, okay, let's create a cultural city so that we no longer have to worry about ad hoc decisions because persons may decide, well, I don't want music playing by my house. We're on Arapita Avenue. We don't want to fit next to us. And these things happen. So a lot of fets are canceled because the residents don't want it. No problem. Let's invest in a proper space. And there's opportunity with the African Bank that is here in the Caribbean region.
All right. Thank you. Hold on.
Good morning, Davey. Good morning, listeners. Well, the International Blind Women's Tournament.
All right. So I thought that was a question that we was going to get there. One person is saying, good morning. There is a zone in the development plan that is earmarked for the creative sector. But I wanted to raise an issue with you just before we vacated the interview this morning. Economists are currently welcoming the decision, but urge caution. One is Dr. Indira Sajiwan, who called it a major competitive and political win that strengthens foreign exchange earnings and job security, while Dr. Varnish James warned agriculture offers little advantage and stressed the need to focus on gas-based industries and energy securities. Your final thoughts very quickly on that.
Well, each economist, if you ask any economist, they'll give you 10 opinions. But some of them I would agree with in some part. All I will say in terms of whether it's a great win, it just resets what where we were a few months ago before the tariffs were raised. In terms of the gas-based sector, there is opportunity. The challenges that we face in terms of gas supply are not going to go away anytime soon. We have problems that are being stoked, unfortunately, with Venezuela, and we are geopolitically not giants. So therefore, we may still need to seriously look at other opportunities. And the services sector presents an opportunity, and the creative sector within that sector is a great sector that allows for tourism and manufacturing to be piggybacked on. So therefore, let's take this opportunity and push the creative sector, but build a economic space that can make sense. But I guess we got to have those talks on another day where we could narrow in on it. And, you know, economics is not necessarily a sexy topic for plenty of people. It's not bacchanalis. So I'm not sure how good your numbers will work where that is concerned.
I'm never worried about that, you know. One thing as a radio host, I'm never worried about the response via phone call or anything like that. I believe in the information that is going out there, and there are silent listeners, and I call them silent because they don't really engage. They wouldn't make a call or send a WhatsApp, but they are listening. They're learning. They're paying attention. How do I know this? When I go out on location to do various broadcasts or OBs out there, they will come up to me and they will shake my hand. They will congratulate me or even express a thankfulness for the way in which we conduct the Morning Rumble. And I say we because while I'm the host of the show, it is a collaborative effort with Guardian Media's producers and stuff that make it all possible for us to get up every morning and be here to share information. So even you, Mr. Obika, I thank you very much for being with us this morning.
And
you made a very, very important point. I want to just reiterate on the fact that you said every economist that you speak with will have a different perspective or differ slightly. Four of us on the junction saw the accident, but we all four saw it from different angles. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about how we look at it. So have a safe one, and thank you again. We would chat again in the not-too-distant future, and thanks again for listening to the Morning Rumble. That's the best morning show. Don't listen to no other morning show.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.